Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. Tim.
Yeah.
Listen, I've got a show for you today. And I know we swore off this topic because I felt like there's nothing left that we can possibly look into with this case. We've been on the air 15 years. I think we've covered this case at least once a year if you average it out over the time. I know there's been years where we've had two different authors on with two different opinions, skeptics, believers, everything in between. I've been on this show. But with the popularity of UFOs right now and everything that's going on in the world around us, I get a message that there's a new book out. And it's a buddy of ours, Philip Mantle, who is fantastic at pointing us in the direction of authors and guests for the show. And I see the title, Touched by Roswell, and I thought, oh, geez, not another Roswell book. What more can we find about Roswell? And then I started to read the synopsis. Touched by Roswell, Crash Encounters of the Rich and Famous. What do former President Bill Clinton, astronaut Edgar Mitchell, and actor Christopher Reeve, singer John Denver all have in common? Well, they all share a connection to the most celebrated UFO event in history, the Roswell incident of 1947. And a bright light shone above me, Tim, and the sound of a chorus of angels sang, and there was more to be told on the Roswell incident of 1947. And we've got one of the two gentlemen behind this new book. Thomas Carey is joining us. It's great to have you back with us, Thomas. Thank you so much for being here with us today, sir.
Nice to be with you, Dave and Tim.
I know we visited with you long ago. You've been one of our guests regarding the Roswell story over the years. And as fascinating as it is, are you surprised that there are still elements that can be kicked over and found about this case that people were not aware of before?
Well, yes. Every time we've written a book, I say to myself, well, this has got to be the last Roswell book.
Right.
And then Don Schmidt comes up with another idea. Well, this current book, Touched by Roswell, came about because in our last book, I think it was Roswell, the Ultimate Cold Case Closed.
Right.
And I wrote a chapter in there called Touched by Roswell, because over the years, we had accumulated a number of famous people who we had come across or interviewed or something that had to do with Roswell. And that one chapter in our previous book had such a interest in it that Don decided, let's write a whole book about the people who came in contact with Roswell, even though they themselves were not a witness to it. And so we approached our normal publisher, our regular publisher that published all of our other books, and they didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do it. So Don is knew Philip Mantle very well. He's been over in England several times. So he said, I'm sure Philip will do it. And sure enough, Philip did it. And I'm holding the book in my hand. It doesn't actually officially come out until July the 1st.
The show is airing on July 1st, the release date of the book. And we do have a link for the book on today's program guide so people can find it and order it.
All right. So that will be a fortuitous coincidence, as they say, that you will be this show will be airing the day the book is officially released.
It's almost like we planned it, Tom. It's almost like we planned it.
So we did the book, and Philip did a great job. It's got a magnificent cover. He sent me half a dozen copies because I did a local conference, a UFO conference here about a month ago, and I sold all of them in the first 10 minutes. They just sold out like in 10 minutes. The cover is fabulous, and the subject matter is very, very interesting, because you will recognize, I don't know if you have a copy of it or not, but you will recognize most of the names. We have approximately 126 names in the book that of people of the rich and famous, actors, actresses, sports people, political people, who have come in contact with Roswell. We not all of them do we describe in detail, but we describe. I have to count it up, but it's I don't know, somewhere between 60 and 100 of them that we describe in detail how they became in touch with Roswell. It's loaded with pictures. And it's just a fun, you never thought of Roswell being fun, but right. This is certainly a fun type book. It's a lighter book, and you'd be surprised of the people who were touched by Roswell.
Well, I want to mention, if I can, just for listeners that might not be familiar with you and the work that you do, our guest, Thomas Carey, holds a master's degree in anthropology and a top secret Air Force security clearance. He's investigated the Roswell incident for the past 30 years, teaming with Don Schmidt, his co-author, since 1998, and he's co-authored 8 books with Schmidt about Roswell. That's why I said
it's now 10.
10 books on Roswell. So you've got all this. Now, I want to know a few things before we dive into this. Having a top secret Air Force security clearance, what do you make of the official release now of the UFO documents?
I'm glad you asked.
Please.
That.
Oh, I'd have to, or my audience would beat me if we didn't talk about this now that it's been released.
It is an absolute joke. It is an absolute joke. I read the release, and I'm thinking to myself, I've read all this before. Where did I read it before? Well, you know where I am. I talking to Dave or Tim?
Both of us. We're both here.
Well, I'm thinking I've read all this before, especially the conclusions. And where they first appear, it's almost word for word. In 1960, the Air Force published a monograph called the Project Blue Book. What was the subtitles? Oh, Special Report Number 14, Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14. And they went through the same things. They looked at cases, and their conclusion was absolutely the same as this one that came out, one the 25th, i.e., okay, we know there's something there that's unexplainable. More than likely, they're natural phenomenon. They're misidentified objects that are terrestrial. Blah 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 blah. I said, oh no, we're not on this again. And the one category that actually had the most was unknown. And they don't come out. They never say UFO. They call them UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena, and they say, "Well, we were able to identify one because they studied 144 cases." Now, here's what they did, Tim and Dave. They shrunk the total cases of what they were actually looking at to 144. During the last 17 years, that they started with the 2004 USS Nimitz sighting off the coast of California by the Navy, and they went forward. So they didn't cover anything beyond 2004. I'm sorry, 2004. So they shrunk the test field to 17 years, and the previous. Going back to 1947, they just left that. They never touched that. And that's where most of your best cases are, right. or a lot of them. And they stuck strictly to cases that were radar trace cases, video, gun camera cases, that sort of thing. And they limited their scope to that. Now, I thought when they were tasked by the Senate to study UFOs, and they were supposed to tell us all they knew. That was my understanding. Well, they didn't get close to that. Like I said, they just studied the last 14 years, and the one case they were able to identify was a falling, believe it or not, a falling balloon. That was the one case they identified. The rest, they say, well, once we get better things to study them with, well, we should be able to give you a better answer. I'm thinking, wow, you have 74 years under your belt, folks. You have 74 years of UFO sightings, and you shrunk it to the last 17, and you only studied radar trace cases, gun camera cases, and even those. And everybody in the world has seen this Elizondo video, right? The one that the U.S. Navy jet is chasing. Everybody has seen that. And I was looking for an answer to that. Well, of course, we all know what the answer is, right? But they said, oh, well, man, we don't. We have to have better equipment, maybe develop a database. And oh, my God, what are they talking about? And so they didn't answer that. What that we all know that that's something that's not from this earth that we know of. But that's the only conclusion they come to, is that it's not manufactured by the United States. They did say they don't believe it's manufactured by an adversary like China or Russia or somebody else. So where does that leave us? It leaves us something that's off the planet, in the way I'm thinking. So it was an absolute, from my perspective, it was an absolute joke, because they did this. They just went from the 1960 playbook, Blue Book Special Report number 14. And they said, oh, but they don't appear to be a threat to national security, but they may be, we're not sure. And we got to get better equipment to build up a military database. So they were all military cases they looked at, all military cases. And
well, that's what I said a while ago. I said, if disclosure happens, I think they'll tackle it from a more recent standpoint of, wow, look at, yeah, boy, the Nimitz Tic Tac videos and
yes,
the pyramid. We're going to tackle it now. We're not going to go back and acknowledge Roswell as real, because then that means we've had over 50 years of lying
yes
to the public, and they painted themselves in a corner they cannot get out of by doing that. So by assessing, wow, now we're seeing it, now we're all having this. Yeah, this is what's intriguing to us. It's got to be a fine dance, and I'm not trying to cover for the government, but it's got to be a fine dance of how do you do this, release it and be upfront, but do it in a way that still protects the secrecy that you've kept in the past.
Right.
And that's a tough mode. And we've seen the way people react. You know, I know there's a lot of comical memes out there, but they say this is why aliens won't come, or this is why we cannot know about aliens. But it's true. People are morons for the most part, Tom, and they do a lot of really stupid things. What kind of fear factor is yes going to go into effect when we finally admit, yeah, there's UFOs and we don't know what to do about them? You know, if we keep that kind of plausible deniability, I think they're worried that they can keep reins of control as opposed to watching the world melt down.
I thought they would at least admit to the Nimitz case and the one on the East Coast. I thought they would at least admit to that. But I felt that they were going to come out with something like this. But even what they came out was less. It was less than what I thought they would admit to. And I'm reading this and I'm saying, oh my goodness, they're just where I've read all this before. And I'm struck by the lack of, I thought there'd be a lot of pushback on this. And so far there hasn't. I'll give you an example. Tucker Carlson on Fox has been covering UFOs now for a couple of years. And Friday, he had Luis Elizondo on, the day that the report came out.
Right.
And Tucker started out with Roswell, but he blew it off. And he says, well, they first said it was a flying saucer. Then they had a press conference and they said it was a weather balloon. So most likely it was a weather balloon. End of Roswell. So he goes to Luis Elizondo. And I've seen Luis Elizondo interviewed before. He was very, very timid on Tucker's show Friday night as if someone told him, this is what you're going to say and this is what you're not going to say. And he looked to me like somebody had gotten to him. And
can I ask about that, though? Do you think Tucker Carlson has not been one of the most forthcoming journalists out there? And yes, he has an interest and he talks about it. But do you think Elizondo's kind of protecting his interests as well by not going too overboard with Tucker?
Oh, yes. Yes. He's still connected. He's still connected. I don't know what department, but he is not free and clear. He is still connected to the government in some way. And when he released that video, it was not with the imprimatur of the Defense Department. It was on his own. And for the Defense Department, the horse was already out of the barn and they couldn't get the horse back in. So the Defense Department had to come up with something. And they just said, well, the video is authentic. And that's all they said. It's authentic. They didn't say what it was, but they had to come up with something because everybody around the world had seen it. And it's very impressive. I think there's two or three of them. One where the object goes into the ocean, and another one, where the first one where the jet fighter is tracking this object. And so the Defense Department had to say something, and they said, well, yes, it is authentic, but that they reluctantly were, pulled to the microphone to have to say that. But Elizondo himself headed up the, ATIP, the Aeronautical Advanced Threat Identification Program, or something like that, for 5 years, 2007 to 2012. And he said and I've seen him where he said he got fed up because he felt he was not getting the response that he himself was witnessing. And so he went public with that video, and that's why all this has happened, because it was in effect, it was the almost the landing on the White House lawn, where there it is. How do you explain it? Right. But Friday night to me, he was subdued, and somebody had told him where he cannot go, I believe.
That's weird, though, because after all these years and how public he's been, how do you think they finally got to him?
Well, I'm sure he's still employed in some way, and who wants to lose their job, right? So he's still drawing a paycheck in some capacity from some governmental agency, and who wants to lose their paycheck?
Yeah, I guess. Weird. Do you think we're going to see any more concrete information or evidence now that they've kind of pulled the lid back and said, hey, we need more pilots to start reporting this without fear of retribution? Do you think we're going to start seeing and hearing more?
No, that's a cover story. In my mind, that's a cover. I thought they were going to do something, before the report. I thought, well, this is it. This is it. They've got to say something, and look what they said. Oh, we need more reports to develop a database, and we like to have them from electronic type equipment, radars and sensors, and all that sort of stuff. And the anecdotal cases, like we're all fond of, is not going to be part of it. You know, Roswell is an anecdotal case. Rendlesham Forest is anecdotal. They're not going to have those. They want these. We're going to develop a base that's going to let us know that it's not a weather balloon. Oh, boy, you really need all kinds of sensors for those. So, I expect a long hiatus here till everybody forgets.
Well, with the slow leaking of that footage and putting it out there, though, that seems to be counterintuitive to what it appeared. Like, they were giving us a soft rollout disclosure, as they've done, as many have said, for the last 50 years in parcels. Do you think there's something big on the horizon coming, and that's why they're being a little more forthcoming? Because they know the genie's out of the bottle, and soon they're not going to be able to debate it. So let's get in front of it and then be as shocked as everybody else when they fully form in the sky or something happens.
It'll only happen when the something happens thing happens. Otherwise, it's the answer is no. This was it. They were brought to the table only because of the Elizondo video went viral, as they say. And unless something, that something, whether it's a White House landing on the White House lawn, which is the euphemism I always like to use, that you can't get away from, they will not come forward. They will have to admit, like you just said, that they've been lying to us for 74 years. It'll be 75 next year when our next Roswell book comes out, believe it or not. it's already written.
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
Yes. All right. But they would have to admit they've been lying to us since 1947. And in Roswell, they committed civil rights violations of the worst sort that they don't want to have to revisit. So, no, I don't expect anything further on this.
All right. Well, let's take a look back. When people ask me, do you really believe, Dave, in UFOs? Would you really believe in Bigfoot? Do you really believe, what are the key elements? Roswell, of course, is always one of the biggest. And because I had a chance to sit in front of Jesse Marcel Jr., you know, about a year prior to his death and speak with him and his daughter and see the earnestness and the humility and the forthcoming way that he was willing to share his story, I really do believe that it wasn't a weather balloon, not Project Mogul. They encountered something otherworldly. And the fact that, you know, there are so many credible witnesses, the fact that, you know, you've got guys that know the difference between a weather balloon and a nuclear bomb, know the difference between a weather balloon and aircraft. And you want me to believe that we're going to put out a press release saying we have a downed saucer and then change it the next day to something else. I believe that's one of the key stories in history. And as you said, it may be anecdotal, but there are so many eyewitnesses, so many different things that point in that direction that it's impossible to just look over it. It's not, I saw some lights in the sky. This thing is so much bigger than that. But how does it start to tie in with all of these rich and powerful and famous people? Is it simply because their fascinations have pushed them to investigate?
No. The names are, you know, I'll give you some of the names. The first gentleman in the book, the first one that we deal with is the Prince Hans Adam II of Liechtenstein. Now, how does Prince Adam II of Liechtenstein get touched by Roswell? I've always wanted to go to Liechtenstein, and I've seen pictures of it, and I'd like to go there and take a look. Prince Hans Adam II is now the crown prince. He's the leader of, whoever the head of Liechtenstein is, that's Prince Hans Adam. He's the wealthiest head of state in Europe. He's one of the fourth wealthiest heads of state in the world. And he got interested in the late 1980s, somehow, in the Roswell case. So what he did was in 1990, he brought all of the then known firsthand witnesses to the case, the Roswell case, together in Washington, D.C., to videotape their stories for posterity. There were 27 of them, and they're all dead now. They're all dead now. And I used that in 1992. They put out a VHS video called Recollections of Roswell. I have a copy, and I use it today as a resource to see what, you know, so-and-so said as far as his own firsthand witness account. But Hans Adam paid for the whole thing, brought everybody together in Washington. they were there a couple of days, and they took their videotape testimonies, 27 of them. There's only one videotape testimony of a living person, and her name was Barbara Duggar. She did not travel to Washington, D.C. They came to her house in Roswell, New Mexico, to interview her. She was the granddaughter of the sheriff, Sheriff George Wilcox. And it's because of her that we know how the Roswell case affected her grandfather. Basically, it destroyed him because the Air Force really, really treated him shabbily and threatened the whole family with death if they ever talked. So we got that story from the granddaughter, Barbara Duggar, who is has a doctor of education, and she was the head of a school district in Texas, the Dalles, Texas, something like that. She's still alive. Everybody else, the 27 first-handers, they're all dead. They're all gone. So that's Prince Hans Adam. How he became interested, I don't know. I don't know. All I know is that he did fund this big meeting in Washington, D.C. of all these witnesses. And he's the first one in our book that we talk about. So
that's remarkable. Why somebody from Liechtenstein? Why did it take somebody from there when there were so many other people around the world that were as fascinated by this? But this guy, I guess, just had the power and wherewithal and foresight to put this together.
Yes, he had the money. He was interested in Roswell somehow. I'm trying to talk Don Schmidt to get us a trip over there to take a look at Liechtenstein. And but I don't know. You know, he's the head of state now. So we have everybody from there's a number of actors and actresses that we talk about whose names you recognize. And every year at the UFO Festival, which actually begins in, what's today, the 29th, or it begins this Friday, the UFO Festival in Roswell. Every year they have one in July. This is the first year in 25 years that I haven't gone because I had I had these two COVID-19 vaccinations, and I had a bad reaction to the second one, and I'm still not up to traveling. So this is the first one I've missed in 25 years, but it starts on Friday. Well, every year they have a guest of honor, and some of the guests of honor that they've had. Adrienne Barbeau from, the actress, we do a whole number on her. We have a full description of her. And I actually wrote the piece on her.
Right. She was on the TV show Maude. She was in the movie Swamp Thing. She was in Creep Show. What is her connection to all of this?
Her connection is just, she was a guest of honor. One year, I'd say somewhere around 2010, somewhere around there. She was the guest of honor in the one year, 2010, 11, something like that. Others like her that were guests of honor, Denise Crosby.
Star Trek, Next Generation.
Star Trek, yes.
Right. Pet Sematary, yep.
And she was Bing Crosby's granddaughter. Her father is Dennis Crosby, but we got to meet her. We have a nice picture in the book of Don and me with Denise.
Tasha Yar, right. Now, what is her take on all this? When you're speaking to these celebrities, they obviously have an interest in this.
They're all impressed with the museum in Roswell, and they all say that we've done a good job. They all basically believe that there's life, other life in the universe. They will say that. A number of them say they believe in the Roswell case. And, nobody has said that I don't believe in this. You know, they all believe in other life, and especially the Roswell case.
Well, let me take a quick break. We'll come back. Tom Carey, our guest today, the book Touched by Roswell, Crash Encounters of the Rich and Famous. We'll dig into some of these other celebrities and what their connections are to Roswell or their fascinations and interests. We do have a link for that book up on today's program guide, so make sure you check for that. We'll be back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Tim Dennis. Our guest today, Tom Carey. He is the author and co-author of 10 books regarding Roswell and the UFO incident that took place there. The new book, Touched by Roswell, Crash Encounters of the Rich and Famous. Let's dive deep into some of the celebrities that are really into this and what their fascination is.
I just wanted to mention one other actress.
Please.
Do you know who Anne Robinson was or is or was as far as an actress?
Anne Robinson. Is that the British actress?
No. She was the female lead in the first War of the Worlds movie from 1953.
Oh, okay, back in the day. Sure. All right.
Yeah, she was the one where she's standing there looking out the window and this spindly hand comes reaching around and touches her on the shoulder, and it was one of the aliens. And she was another actress that we brought in. The War of the Worlds was I saw that movie. That was a famous movie. I thought it was the best one of the they have a couple of remakes since then, but I was a little kid when I saw it, and I jumped out of my seat when that hand reached up and and touched her on the shoulder. But so we have, President Bill Clinton.
Okay.
We know he has two of our books. The first one was written when Don Schmidt was a research partner with Kevin Randall. The very first book they wrote was in 1981. It was called UFO Crash at Roswell. And you remember the Star Report? It's mentioned in the Star Report that I think Paul Davids, the producer of the movie Roswell, sent him a copy of that book because Paul Davids' father was Bill Clinton's history professor at Georgetown when Clinton was a student at Georgetown University. So he sent Clinton a copy of UFO Crash at Roswell 1991. Well, we didn't hear any more about it, but it's mentioned in a footnote in the Star Report because they were looking for a book that what was that woman's name? The one with the blue dress.
Oh my God. Why can't I not think of it now?
Monica Lewinsky.
Monica Lewinsky. Ken Starr was looking for a book that Monica Lewinsky gave to Bill Clinton as a present. And they found it in their library in the White House. They mentioned a couple books that they saw on the shelf, and one of them was UFO Crash at Roswell.
Well, nice.
Well, our first book was called Witness to Roswell, and it came out in 2007. That was our bestseller. Came out in 2007, and Paul Davids, the producer of the movie Roswell, this is when Hillary Clinton was running for president, and she was running in the primary against Barack Obama. And Paul Davids knew that they were going to have an event in New York City to raise money, for the primary campaign. So Hillary is up there at the microphone speaking, and Paul Davids goes over to Bill Clinton you know, aside, and he says, hello, President Clinton. My father was your history professor, Jules Davids, in Georgetown. They go, oh, yes, I remember him. And so he says, this is a book about the Roswell incident. I wrote the foreword. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, Bill Clinton has been interviewed since, and it's clear to me that he never read the book. Because when he was in Dublin, Ireland, one of the kids in the audience asked Clinton about Roswell. He says, well, I don't know anything, and I want to know. And I'm thinking, well, goodness, you've got two books right in. You've got him. So he never did read it, but I believe Hillary did.
There might not have been enough pop-up pictures in it for him. You got to make a Roswell coloring book. That might entrance the politicians. And no, folks, don't send me hate mail. I'm joking around, God's sakes. Tim, you had a question, though, for Tom.
Well, yeah, Tom, you know, in my presentation that I do on conspiracy theories, I have a clip from Jimmy Kimmel, which features President Clinton, and in there, the gist of the clip is that he talks about, you know, using an alien invasion to kind of bring us all together. But in that clip, he does talk about how he was brought to Area 51, and he claims that there's nothing at Area 51 as far as aliens go, that there are no aliens at Area 51.
We have the Jimmy Kimmel thing in our book. We have it in our book. He was being interviewed by Jimmy Kimmel on his show.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk got around to UFOs, and it got around to Roswell, and all of a sudden Bill got real serious. He was, you know, he's lighthearted all the time, but when the talk got around to Roswell, his whole demeanor changed, and we mentioned that in the book. The reason he got to Area 51, I believe, was that a number of lawsuits were filed against the Area 51, or who was ever, I don't know if the CIA was still running it, or was it the Air Force, but a number of lawsuits were filed because of they were burning hazardous material there, and a number of people got sick because of it, and a few died, and so they sued the government and lost, of course, because I don't think you can sue the government, but Bill Clinton did finally admit, this was the first admission, that there was a facility there. He never did name it Area 51, but he said there is a facility there that we are being sued because of the hazardous material. And so that was a sort of a halfway acknowledgement of the existence of Area 51. But that we do talk about that interview with Jimmy Kimmel. We even have a photograph of that.
When was it that he admitted to that? Because it was
1996.
Okay, because it seemed like he stuck pretty steadfastly to the fact that there was nothing there, and it was only I believe it was President Obama was the one who kind of hinted that there was stuff out there, but he couldn't talk about it, and then
right.
It
right.
was, you know, and then it was President Trump who, of course, from there said he wanted to open stuff
Trump
up.
Trump said he didn't know anything about it. I don't believe that. I think he does know.
I think he does, too. Yeah. Yeah. But he's the one who kind of said, well, I don't really believe in this stuff, but I'll open up all the documents. And
yeah, that was the politically correct answer, I believe.
Right.
I don't believe in this. No political. Up until I guess it was Senator Marco Rubio was the one that instigated this rider to the intelligence funding bill that ordered the Department of Defense to tell us what they know about UFOs. I believe that was a rider that Rubio had attached to the 2021.
Well, and Rubio did it in the name of defense. He was saying that no matter if it was extraterrestrial or not, it was still a matter of our country's defense.
It's always, yes. Yeah. They, they always couch it in the name of defense mm-hmm. and threats to national security. They mm-hmm. always do that. Yes.
Yeah.
Because we're not looking for UFOs. We're looking for threats to national security. But we all know what it's about.
Well, in all fairness, and I'll throw this at you, Tom, in all fairness, there's money to be made there. And if Marco Rubio says, well, I'm doing this in the name of defense, of course, there's a big defense contract there, whether it be alien or whether it be a human, you know, construct that's flying over our airspace, you know, uninvited. You know, you can pull defense contract money into your state, especially if you have a defense contractor in your state, by saying, hey, there's an unidentified threat here and we need to dig into it, you know.
Everything revolves around the money.
Yes.
Everything revolves around the money. Follow the money trail.
Exactly.
I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this. The wreckage, UFO, you know, what's interesting is we have an associate. I won't name him. He doesn't like his name used, who has been working with us for over 10 years. And he filed a FOIA request to the Department of Defense for he wanted to know, do you have UFO wreckage? Where is it and what have you been doing with it? So he filed that in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard back. So early this year, he said, okay, I'm going to unleash my lawyers on you and file a lawsuit because you have to make a reasonable response to FOIA requests. And they never responded. So I'm going to file suit. Well, he got an answer in 2 weeks.
Hmm.
Okay. And it was from the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. He got a response from the Defense Intelligence Agency on their stationery. It was emails. Everything was done by email, but it was under the logo of the DIA. And he got a response that yes, they didn't refer to it as UFO, but they referred it to as UAP, the common What do they call it? The UFO is now UAP.
Right. Unidentified aerial phenomena.
Yes, they use that term. And they said, yes, we do have wreckage, UAP wreckage. It's at Bigelow Aerospace in Nevada. And there are scientists now working on this program, that program. Blah, blah, blah. And our friend almost dropped his teeth because it was even more than he had asked for. And the programs that they were working on are just, you know, they fly over my head. I mean, they're so arcane, but they admitted that they had UAP wreckage. It was at Bigelow Aerospace, and this is what they're working on. We have that in writing from the DIA. Now, and so what happened was somebody in the DIA recognized, oh my God, what do we, they tried to walk it back, but it was too late. It was too late. Because we have it under the signature of the head of the DIA.
Mm-hmm.
They have this. So we have that on the one hand, and then you have this report, that came out on last Friday, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because we already have them on the record. And we had heard for a number of years that the wreckage Roswell wreckage, because I don't know about other crashes. Maybe there are other ones, but we just concentrated on Roswell. That the wreckage, of course, originally went to Wright-Patterson or Wright Field in Dayton, Ohio in 1947. And that's where all the biological entities went as well. Four dead, one still alive. But at some point in the early 80s, all of that was transferred to the Area 51 in Nevada. And then when things at Nevada, in the Nevada place, Area 51, people started focusing on that. They moved it to Dugway, Utah. And then they started focusing on that. So as we speak, the story that we have is that all of this UFO or UAP wreckage is now in private hands. Now, I don't mean your Uncle Joe or Aunt Louisa. I mean, these are private hands, big companies that have a lot of government contracts, like Bigelow Aerospace, Lockheed Martin, to name it two. I think Harry Reid named Lockheed Martin. Rand Corporation, Battelle Memorial Institute in Columbus, Ohio, and so forth. So it's all in private hands now.
I'm curious, Tom. I want to follow up that bit of information and ask you, do you know of any of this wreckage that was recovered? Was any of it reverse engineered into any technology that we have in our hands today that you know of?
Absolutely. Yes. The one that we're we've heard, the transistor and this and that and the other thing. There are two that I believe that I will subscribe to. The first one is the so-called memory metal, the so-called memory metal that was a large part of the small pieces of wreckage, where it was these pieces of metal-like. Very thin aluminum or very thin tin foil that you would get in a pack of cigarettes when people still smoked. It was indestructible. But the other thing was you could wad this material up in your hand into a ball, open your hand, and it would unfurl itself without a crease. You couldn't cut it, scratch it, burn it, or do anything to it of a permanent nature. That's what we call our memory metal. It's Don Schmidt and my holy grail of Roswell. That's what we're looking for. That's the thing we're missing. And, so our friend that's been working with us for over 10 years, he started out, he wanted to know what happened to the wreckage. He traced it to Wright-Patterson. And what happened was that the Air Force, shortly after the Roswell crash, they contracted with the Battelle Memorial Institute in Columbus, Ohio, to back engineer the so-called memory metal.
Okay.
And it took them years to do it. And in 1962, and what they did, Battelle didn't like their name being associated at all with UFOs. They just did. We don't want our name in the same context as anything having to do with UFOs. So they laundered the discovery or the re-engineering project to the Naval Ordnance Lab. I think it's in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And Their logo is NOL, Naval Ordnance Lab. And so they back engineered this as best they could. It's not as good as the real deal because you can cut it. They sell it. It's something called nitinol, NITINOL. It's an amalgam of nickel and titanium. And it took them years of testing to come up with this. And so the nitinol, it's NI for nickel, TI for titanium, and NOL for Naval Ordnance Lab. So the Naval Ordnance Lab announced this new material in 1962. And you can buy it. You can buy it by the roll. You can buy it by the sheet. You can buy it by the tube thing, anything that requires bendability. Something like your eyeglasses. A lot of your eyeglasses today have frames that you can bend and tread on and twist around. They come back to the original shape. That's nitinol, and it's used in the space program. It's used in the space program. It's got certain qualities that go over my head, but I certainly believe that was. And the other thing is that my associate, he located the interim reports of the progress in this project. They first they said, "Oh, we don't have any of those. We don't." He contacted Battelle and he contacted the Wright-Patterson Air Oh, we can't find anything like this. He found them in the Defense Department in Washington, D.C., the interim reports on the progress of, making this metal. Hmm. And so we have those reports. They started, the first one was in 1948. And so that's like right after they got the contract. So I do believe that came from Roswell. The other thing I believe came from the Roswell crash was laser technology, because there were reports from firsthand witnesses of these strings, a string-like material that you tie them in a knot, you shine a light in one end, you could see the light coming out the other end. So to me, that's some sort of laser device. So I would also suggest that perhaps lasers had their origin from the Roswell crash.
Was there any direct ties between any of the richer businessmen that were, let's say, influential in industry at that time, getting a hold of some of these secrets and really making a lot of money off of these secrets?
I believe they were rich before they got involved in this. The one that comes to mind is Ben Rich from Lockheed. He was interviewed at some point, I don't know, in the 1990s or 80s, I'm not sure. And they were asking him about UFOs. Do you believe in UFOs? He said, yes. They're the ones that we make and the ones that they make. And he was pointing up to the sky. So he certainly knew. But, Lockheed was rich before, World War II, the famous fighter planes that they made. So they were in the Rand Corporation. I mean, sure, they made money on their whole businesses usually are tied to government contracts. So I don't know what they made on Roswell.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about, with the new book and all the cool changes and things that you've been able to find and kind of turn over. What are some of the biggest surprises for you with the rich and famous tied and associated with the Roswell case?
Well, that it crossed all, even though they were rich and famous, certainly the something like Mickey Rooney. Would you believe that Mickey Rooney crossed paths with Roswell by way of his eighth and final wife?
All right.
His eighth and final wife, June or Joy? Oh boy, let's see here, Jan. I knew it was one of those. Okay. Jan Rooney. Uh-huh. We were all on I'm losing my mind here. The Larry King Show, on CNN. He was a big fan of Roswell. He had us on a couple of times. But I remember this one show. I was down in Roswell, stuck in the big hangar where all the wreckage was brought in 1947. It was like 110 degrees outside. And inside, when they put the Klig lights on you, I was roasting. And Don Schmidt was on satellite from Wisconsin. He was called home. And the guests that night were Jan Rooney, and she told the story of how her father, who was a colonel in the Air Force at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in 1947, all of a sudden he was called out to New Mexico that summer. And he would never tell her why he was called out there. He would never tell her why he was called specifically. He kept that a secret. But one night they were at the dinner table and they had a friend over, and the friend asked them, do you think there will ever be a disclosure about UFOs? And he looks around and he says, well, I can't tell you, but there are things. We do have things, but they will never be disclosed because there will be panic in the streets. So he feared the 1938 War of the Worlds panic. If the real truth was ever released about UFOs, and I'm sure he was talking about Roswell because he was there and he at the time that stuff was being brought in. And so her father was part of the cover-up, and she believed him that he thought he was, you know, helping his duty to his country not to say anything. But he did reveal that they did have things, they're real, but if the truth ever got out, there would be panic. So, and Mickey Rooney up to that point was a non-believer in UFOs, wow. You know? Mm-hmm. So, so what he did is he sought out a meeting with his father-in-law, who he was probably older than anyway, but he sought a meeting with his father-in-law, and according to Jan, he said after that he became very interested in the subject, and he wanted a copy of our book, and I sent Mickey Rooney a copy. I signed it to a living legend, and I signed my name to it. And unfortunately, he died within 6 months. So, but that was the Mickey Rooney's connection to it. It was through his wife.
Wow. Now, going through this, you know, you mentioned Christopher Reeve and so many others. What do we know about the former Superman and his connections?
That is a he. That was a chapter Don wrote. So
okay.
But Christopher Reeve wanted to play Jesse Marcel in the movie Roswell. I do know that. He wanted to play Jesse Marcel in the movie Roswell, which ultimately went to Kyle MacLachlan to play Jesse right. Marcel.
Right.
And unfortunately, soon after he, you know, he fell off a horse and broke his neck and was a quadriplegic after that. And I think he died just a few years ago. But I'm sorry, but Don wrote that chapter, and we each, you know, we have like 126. We each wrote half of the people, and. Right. That's the best I can do. Do you remember Lefty Frizzell?
Sure.
Lefty Frizzell was a rising country and western singer. They thought he was going to be the next Hank Williams. And when he was 18 years old, he had a gig at KGFL Radio in Roswell. This is like in 1947, at the time of the Roswell crash. He had a daily, I think it was a 15-minute gig or something like that, singing. He was 18, 19 years old at KGFL Radio in Roswell. Now, KGFL was right in the eye of the hurricane of that case, because one of the announcers, Frank Joyce, was the first one to interview Mac Brazel, the rancher up in who had a ranch up in Corona, right, and found all that stuff. So Frank Joyce knew the whole story. Also, the station owner, Walt Whitmore, they went up there and they grabbed the rancher. They hid him out at Walt Whitmore's house in Roswell, and they took a wire recording of a statement. So the whole thing at early on was taking place in this KGFL studio, and the Air Force got wind of it. The government got wind of it, so that they had the FCC chairman in Washington call up the station and said, "Don't you ever air anything more about this incident, or you're going to lose your license." So through all of this, Frizzell being there every day, he knew the whole story. So what happens is Frizzell, unfortunately, he was up on a morals charge. He spent about 6 months in George Wilcox's jail in Roswell. And he became good friends afterwards with the Oki from Pinocchio. What was that? The singer who did Oki from Wiscoki.
That's starting to get out of my range of musical interest.
Merle Haggard.
Merle Haggard. Mm-hmm. And so Frizzell died he died very young at age 47, long before we ever heard about Roswell. But he was friends with Merle Haggard. And one year at the festival, this is when we were down there, this is like 7, 8, 9 years ago, the headliners in the city for the festival were Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard. So Don Schmidt and I are sitting at our table there signing books. And Merle Haggard had already been in the newspaper saying that he knew what Lefty Frizzell, one of these days he's going to go public with it. I said, oh my goodness. So we're sitting there signing our books and we're thinking, geez, how can we get a hold of Merle Haggard? Because he's in town for this festival. Well, we're sitting there and Merle Haggard's manager comes over. He says, I'm Merle Haggard's manager and he would like to talk to you fellas. We're going, oh my God, we can't believe it. We can't believe it. We're going to get the story finally. And he says, okay, you guys stay here. I'll get back to you. And the guy never got back to us. He never got back to us. Oh, so
it's going to be so frustrating.
Yes. So Lefty Frizzell knew the story. Merle Haggard knew it secondhand from Lefty, and we never got to it. I even have a picture in the book of Lefty, of Merle Haggard, and I also have a picture of the jail cell where Lefty spent 6 months.
Nice.
You know, I interviewed Lefty had a brother, David Frizzell. I think his big song was God made Oklahoma or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, I interviewed David Frizzell, and we were having a great conversation. I was telling him how great his songs are, and as soon as I mentioned the word Roswell, he hung up on me.
He really?
Just hung up the phone. And
why do you think people are still so afraid of that and talking openly about that?
They think, especially professionals, the term UFOs, the term Roswell is still taboo in the major media and in the major newspapers. It's still taboo because the subject goes back. You guys, I'm sure, are too young to remember the 1950s and the so-called contactees, you know, the crazy people who said, oh, I just had a tour of the solar system from our space brothers, you know, and it just gave UFOs or flying saucers a bad name that has stuck with it ever since, that there's too many crazies that and there are some there are some crazies, and I've met some of them, but it is a taboo subject because of that.
All right. You just think that after all this time, enough people had died, enough things had happened that, you know, obviously some people have felt better about coming forward, but
the Elizondo video did a lot to change things.
Open that freeway again. Sure.
Yes.
Well, the book is out for those of you listening today. It is out today, Touched by Roswell, Crash Encounters of the Rich and Famous. Tom Carey, our guest. We have a link for the book on today's program guide, so it's easy to find. Make sure you rate and review the book. Tom, thank you so much for coming on and spending some time with us.
I should mention Elvis Presley is in our book. I wrote that one, but Elvis is in there. So,
well, you can't tease us with that. What is Elvis's connection?
That's the teaser.
You son of a. All right. Well, keep that up. You're going to end up abducted yourself. That's how it plays out, Tom. So check out the book. Read it for yourself. See it. Thank you so much. We'll be back again. And remember tonight to watch the live video stream on our YouTube channel and social media. The Devil Made Me Do It case featured in the new Conjuring story. Jeff Belanger, our special guest. Go check out the Darkness Radio YouTube page. Subscribe to it. It's free. And click the like button and the bell so that you're alerted when new product that goes up there on the new programs go up there on the YouTube page. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.